At British Airways, we're recruiting in our ground operations team at London Heathrow. You'll have bags of responsibility as a valued colleague below the wing of our aircraft. Every touchdown and takeoff would not be possible without our brilliant team. So this is your chance to make a real difference and showcase your original skills and talents. New joiners will receive a £1,000 sign-on bonus, along with staff travel benefits from day one. Plus, we offer world-class training and career development opportunities. Bonus terms and conditions apply. Visit ba.com/careers and apply now.
V1.
Pull up. Pull up. Pull up. Terrain. Terrain. Pull up. Terrain.
Welcome to the Flight Safety Detectives. Hosts John Golia and Greg Fife, two of the world's most respected aviation safety experts, talk all things related to aviation and aerospace. This podcast and the Flight Safety Detectives YouTube channel are brought to you by the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, PAMA, and Avemco Insurance, a world-class provider of aviation insurance and your one stop for all general aviation insurance needs. Get a customized quote at Avemco.com or give them a call at 888-879-0389. Tell them you're a listener of the show and receive a 5% discount. Now it's time to buckle up, because it's wheels up for the latest episode of Flight Safety Detectives.
Well, hello, John. It's another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. We're missing Todd. He's missing in action. So it's just you and me today. And I think we've got a pretty good show set up for not only today, but the following show, because we're going to dissect a little bit two accidents that occurred back in the 90s, early 90s, involving the Embraer 120 operated by Atlantic Southeast Airlines. These two accidents that we've picked bring home a couple of things that we've talked about over past shows with regard to thorough and methodical inspections and maintenance work. And I think that when we finish wrapping up the second accident, which will play sequentially with this accident that we're going to dissect today, we're going to talk about where the issues lie and where things need to be improved with regard to inspection processes, not only out in the field with the maintenance techs, but also with the manufacturers.
Yes. You know, that in the maintenance is a process, and the process starts with the manufacturer. The manufacturer has a role in the designing and the of the airplane and the designing of the maintenance functions that need to be employed to keep the airplane in an airworthiness condition. And all too often, or too often, maybe is a better way of saying it, we see that the manufacturer doesn't rise to the level that he needs to in order to make their repairs and their inspection processes robust enough to catch these failures. And we've seen it in inside turbine engines. We've seen it in landing gear. We've seen it in many, many systems over time. And it just keeps popping its ugly head up for an assortment of reasons. You know, there's a lot of pressure on the manufacturers to design these repairs that don't expend unlimited resources. You know, you can't spend all your money on one repair. So you design them to catch the problems that you see, and sometimes there's problems you don't see.
Yeah.
Complicated process on the part of the manufacturer and on the part of the airline, and the FAA should be the checks and balance in there, and oftentimes they don't catch it themselves either. So it's not an easy process sometimes, and it's not straightforward sometimes. Okay, so this is a good example of one of those lapses that involve the airline and the manufacturer.
In this case study that we're going to talk about today involved a Southeast, an Atlantic Southeast Airlines airplane. It was at that time, it was a commuter being operated in the early 90s. It was a flight from Jackson Hartsfield Airport heading to Brunswick, Georgia. It's not a very long flight. There were 23 people on board, including the crew, and everything seemed normal, or ops normal, if you will, as the airplane had taken off, climbed altitude. And as the airplane neared Brunswick, Georgia, the crew had experienced a problem with one of the propellers, one of the systems on the airplane. The prop basically ended up being kind of a runaway prop situation, where when they pulled the power back to the flight idle position, of course, the propellers will stay in a positive thrust position. But in the aftermath of the investigation, the NTSB found, based on cockpit voice recorder, sound spectrum analysis, and other information, that in fact, as the crew pulled that power back to a flight idle position for the descent, the propeller blades actually went into a position that were below flight idle. And that is a critical issue with controllability in this airplane, John, because as you and I talked briefly before we got onto the program, it creates a barn door effect out there on one side of the airplane.
Well, Ray, so you wanted to have, ideally, you want to have some pulling on the prop, meaning the prop is still trying to pull air back across the wing, even when it's at the minimum setting. And when you go below that minimum setting, that this propeller, which I think is like 13 feet, 6 inches, whatever, whatever, it's pretty big.
Yeah.
When it gets to below that minimum thrust pulling effect, it becomes then a big wall. It's spinning around and it's effectively a big 13-foot piece of plywood out in front of the wing. And it drastically slows down the airplane on that side and starts to put you in a spiral.
And the NTSB looked at a variety of different things with regard to that point exactly, where they were looking at flight control issues and whether or not there were a problem with the actual flight controls versus basically the flight controls being blanked by the propeller and the position of those blades, which created that barn door effect like you were talking about. Unfortunately, you had a very experienced crew flying the airplane. What really brought attention to this accident, when the crew lost control trying to get the airplane down, they couldn't control that propeller. They knew they couldn't make it to an airport. They tried to look for an open field and eventually lost control of the airplane. The airplane crashed in a field and killed everyone on board. The notoriety that was brought to this accident was the fact that there was a NASA astronaut, Sonny Carter, on the airplane, but more importantly, there was a senator on board, John Tower. And this really became known as the John Tower accident because he was on the airplane. And when you start looking and examining the facts, conditions, and circumstances, what the board found was that there was a deficiency in the design of the propeller control unit by the propeller manufacturer, Hamilton Standard. And in looking at the deficiency, it caused the basic loss of control, pitch control of those propeller blades.
Yes. You know, and this engine, it's a Pratt Whitney Canada PT6, is a workhorse in this industry. And it's used across the industry in a whole host of airplanes. I wanted to count them, but the numbers started to get up there.
Yeah.
It's just everywhere. It's just a reliable workhorse. But the thing that does change on every one of these installations is the propeller. The propeller is the differentiator between where this thing is going to be used. And so that... There is a different design on every one of these. And in this particular design, in this point in time, they had uncovered some problems that needed to be addressed. And this was one of them. They're going below flight idle in flight with a propeller that's now increasing the drag on the airplane is just a recipe for a disaster. And we saw it here.
Exactly, John. And from a maintenance standpoint, there was no real way for a mechanic to determine that the airplane, this particular airplane, had flown four previous flights prior to the accident flight. So again, whether or not it actually was felt or had an issue or had even a precursor for these other flight crews, apparently they didn't write anything up. The airplane, again, stayed in service. They load these folks up and take off on this particular flight. And all of a sudden now, the prop blades go into this adverse position and the crew loses the airplane. The NTSB not only looked at HAM standard or Hamilton standard, the manufacturer, for a faulty design, but they questioned where was the FAA in this process? Did they set certification criteria that would have accommodated a failure like this in a failure modes analysis as part of the certification basis for this particular propeller?
You know, the FAA has really got a very difficult job on the certification side because the manufacturers just continually design and improve their products to be more efficient, both on the production side and on the operating side. So it's not so easy for the FAA to stay on top of this. And it takes a lot of people to do that. And we have seen the ups and downs with personnel in the FAA and the experience levels of those personnel within the FAA. So it really is a difficult job that they have. But that doesn't mean they lay down on the job, which we have seen in a number of cases. Most recently, what's been coming out with the 737 MAX over the last few years, with how the FAA really wasn't watching what Boeing was doing and what Boeing's management had been doing to the process internal to the Boeing company. And I'm sure there's other companies too. I don't want to take a shot at Boeing without saying that there could be others doing the same thing. But we've gone to this lean management and all of this new business processes, and much of which was driven by Jack Welch at GE. And many of the leadership positions in these companies are products of the Jack Welch School of Management, so to speak.
And it's evident that, you know, we can go back in history and find other, you know, failures of component parts and question the certification basis and oversight. And that kind of thing, especially during redesign of component parts by a manufacturer. We look at this accident. Was this an isolated event? Fortunately, it was. There was corrective actions taken so it wouldn't happen again, but it cost 23 people their lives in order to bring it forward. Now, the board also found when they were doing this investigation, and we've gone through this, John, when we talked about the investigation process, and that while, yes, we are looking for the facts, conditions, and circumstances that support a probable cause and contributing factors, there are always peripheral issues that we find in accidents, all of these accidents. And in this case, the board did address a chronic problem of fatigue. They identified some fatigue issues with this crew having worked long days and things like that. And while they state in the report it was not a contributing or causal factor to the accident, didn't degrade their performance any with this particular situation. These are the kinds of accidents and these are the kinds of findings that as you look back, which we always want to look back at historical accidents, when we think that there is a trend developing and we saw that in the commuters, the 130, this, because it was in the early 90s, this wasn't a 121 carrier yet. It was still being operated under 135. That in this particular instance, these fatigue issues would hopefully get addressed later after 1994. So we get concerned when we're looking at issues, looking back at a lot of accidents where even though this issue of fatigue may not be a cause or contributing factor in this particular accident, we're always looking for symmetry in systemic issues, if you will. And this would lead to one of those multiple accidents, John, that as after 1994, when we did the special safety study about bringing these 135 commuter carriers up under 121 for a one level of safety, fatigue was a big issue. Flight crew duty time schedules and that kind of thing eventually evolved into changes in these work rules for these types of flight crews. But getting back to the primary point, again, we are always concerned about the FAA's oversight. We are always concerned about the FAA's processes, but we are also always concerned about the certification basis, because as aircraft evolve, technology evolves, are the regulations keeping up with that evolution of technology so that the certification basis is thorough and methodical, so that we don't have these quote faulty or deficient designs, as the board found in this particular accident.
Yeah, those fatigue issues, you know, that you brought up in 1994 were still with us in 1999. It took better part of 5 years to finally get that commuter level airline pilot the kind of rest that they needed. And it's still not settled, because we still have problems in the cargo areas. The cargo carriers have not been included under that rule yet.
And we're going to address those. We're going to talk about that in future shows, because there are a number of accidents that we have both investigated where backside of the clock flying and that kind of flying, especially with cargo haulers, is still a continuing big issue today. And we dissected a little bit of that when we talked about Korean Air Flight 801 that crashed in Guam, 747, where you had a flight crew who was fatigued flying off of a normal, not their normal schedule. So fatigue is going to be one of those issues, and we're going to have a subject matter expert friend of ours on the show to talk about the effects of fatigue. And it doesn't just happen in big airplanes. It happens in general aviation airplanes. And I think it happens more often than not than we've seen. So that's another discussion for another day. But just to wrap this up, John, what we want to do with the next accident, which also involved an Atlantic Southeast Airlines aircraft 4 years later, involved another propeller issue. And it was it unfortunately involved the same manufacturer, Hamilton Standard, with a propeller blade. So coming up in our next show, stay tuned for that. We're going to talk about that and then wrap both of these accidents together. So given the fact that it is just you and me, and of course, you can always tell that I'm in an undisclosed location because I always have a virtual background behind me. I'll be on the move again, but I want to leave you, my friend, with the last words.
All right. And actually words is proper, because since our last show, I have done more continuing research into accidents. And over the last year or so, the number of events involving student pilots with an instructor in the airplane or recently starting on their own in rental airplanes is notable. And they're just popping up several a month. And I would like to remind everybody that Avemco Insurance is our sponsor, but renter's insurance at this point in time is a must.
Mm-hmm.
If Absolutely. You want to protect yourself, protect your family, you need to definitely have yourself a good rental insurance policy. So you can call Avemco, or there's other insurance companies that offer it as well. But please, please protect yourself. I can see people getting really drawn into a mess by not having the resources to defend themselves or to protect themselves. So, and then I'll fall back to my standard that I still see, and we have another recent accident involving this, see and avoid. If you're going to go fly, please pay attention to your pre-planning, your weather, not only where you are, where you're going, but everything in between. Another inadvertent IMC accident just in the last couple of weeks. You need to be paying attention to the weather. When you get to the airport, do it all again. Double check what you've already done. Recheck the weather. When you get out to the airplane, I've been doing some work on tires. Tire pressure.
Yep.
I'm beside myself on what I'm seeing with problems with tire pressure. Not a lot of crashes, but damn close to it. A lot of airplanes being pulled off runways because of flat tires, or soft tires, and the airplane loses control and ends up in the grass and can't get out. It's just crazy if we're not checking our tire pressure. And you can't just tell sometimes from looking at a tire, because unlike car tires, the sidewalls on many airplane tires are 3 or 4 plies thick. So they have to be down a lot of air before they start to show the squat that you would look for. So make sure you do a good pre-flight. If you can, touch your airplane, touch the flight controls. Then after you get in the airplane and get flying, put that head on a swivel. See and avoid. We had another see and avoid just here recently. We've had a number of near misses, but we had an accident, not fatal, but we had an accident for see and avoid. You got to put that head on a swivel. Keep your eyes open. People don't realize how much there is to do while you're flying with an airplane. You can never really relax. You're watching your instruments, watching your headings. You're watching inside. You got to watch outside. You got to pay attention. You have to use all your senses. You got to get your hearing. You can hear problems with the engine. You can sometimes hear problems with the airplane. You need to use all your senses to make sure that you're going to get from point A to B successfully. And if you got people on board, you have a bigger burden.
Yeah.
Please.
Absolutely.
Please, please fly responsibly, fly safely.
To listen or watch more episodes of this show, go to flightsafetydetectives.com, the Flight Safety Detectives YouTube channel, or your favorite place to listen to podcasts. To contact John and Greg about the show, send them an email at flightsafetydetectives@gmail.com. And remember, for aviation insurance needs, contact Avemco Insurance at avemco.com or give them a call at 888-879-0389. Mention Flight Safety Detectives and receive a 5% discount. Thanks for listening to the Flight Safety Detectives, and remember to always fly safe.